Good morning. How are you, Mr.? Mr. Comptroller. Good. Hey, welcome. This is the Board of Public Works for the great state of Maryland. It is March 10, 2010. This will be an eventful day. Later, the Comptroller will be, holding a hearing on revenue estimates.
Huh? Correct.
Coming up for the next year. We hope and pray that the revenue estimates will be better than they were, and the treasurer will be there as well. So before we get into the agenda, let me ask the comptroller or the treasurer if they have anything they'd like to share with the rest of us.
I would just like to briefly say, Governor Comptroller, I just come off of 3 days of meetings with treasurers from around the state and financial office from around the state. And there is no doubt, first of all, as we all know, Maryland is facing tremendous challenges in revenue, short-term and longer. It is not gratifying to know that others face even much worse, but on the other hand, it does show we're still in the boat together. Other than North Dakota, which has a large oil fine. But the other thing is to know that we are all working together with our friends on the Hill and in the executive agencies with whom we met yesterday, trying to impress upon them the fact that as the economy starts turning around, the states, as we know, do not see that in their revenue, which support the education, health, and other programs of the state, for some months, or even longer, year, because of the lag in revenue collection. And that's something that the federal people sort of acknowledge, but I think it's going to require constant reiteration of that fact, which, when you consider it, is common sense, before it really is absorbed. And the fact that if the 50 states or 49 states continue to be in serious trouble and continue to have to cut back on employment, the sort of cuts that are being projected right now equate to about a 1% decrease in the nation's GDP, which is not an insignificant thing. The states are very important players in this whole picture, and I'm pleased that they recognize that Maryland is right next door to the District of Columbia, and therefore calling upon us and looking at us as examples of how to handle the problem. But I think that the association to which the Comptroller and I belong, and I know the National Governors Association, the Conference of State Legislatures, and all the others are going to have to continue working very hard to keep reminding the folks in Washington that the people and the programs out in the state, which is the entire United States of America, are still feeling the serious pains of an almost unprecedented economic crisis. So they were listening, but they need to be told over and over and over. That is the news I bring them.
Mr. Comptroller.
Thank you, Governor and Madam Treasurer. I was actually having a pretty good day until you brought up the issue of revenues, but it is a serious situation. I concur with what the Treasurer just said. I'd like to wish everyone a good morning and remind everyone that we're not dealing with a whole lot of snow falling on us. And I don't know about everybody in your respective areas, but the snow is actually beginning to disappear, and I think spring is around the corner. Now, that's the good news. As you know, with spring comes the tax season, and the tax deadline is approaching. And I just wanted to remind everyone that we have a little over a month to go until April 15th. It's a filing deadline. I'd like to encourage everybody who hasn't filed to file. And if you can file electronically, please do so. Not only will you be helping the state save money, it's $1.60 that we save if you file electronically versus putting a paper return in, but you'll be helping your own bottom line as well. If you're due a refund, there's no faster way to get a refund than to file electronically and use direct deposit. We guarantee you'll get your refund within 72 hours. That beats everybody, including the federal government. There are also benefits that if you owe money to us, if you file electronically and use direct debit, you can schedule your payment for April 30th rather than April 15th. That's an extra 2 weeks to pay. Right now, we're in the heart of the tax season. We know the last 5 weeks will be extremely busy, even more so, frankly, because the blizzard it's counterintuitive, but there were fewer returns during the blizzards and during all the snow stuff. I thought people might stay home and I don't know, for some reason they didn't have taxes at the front of their thinking when they were at home during the snow. So we're expecting a lot of people to file from the last month. We've processed approximately 850,000 returns so far, of which 775,000 have been filed electronically. Last year we had a record year for electronic filing. We're hoping to set a new record. So whether you're getting a refund or and want it quickly, or whether you owe and want a couple of extra weeks with your money earning interest in the bank, the best way to go is electronic filing. You'll be helping yourselves and helping the state. Look forward to reporting on the e-filing numbers when we meet again. When we meet in early May, I'd like to get some of the final figures. Thank you, Governor. My pleasure.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller. Let's start with the – we have a couple of people here, and we're going to get to both of your items. We're joined by the mayor, by Mayor Eugene Grant. Mayor, thank you very, very much for being here. And we're also joined by Kristen Alsher from Myersville. Mayor Grant has an item on the DGS agenda, I believe, and Ms. Alsher has one on the open space. But let's start with the secretary's agenda here.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. We have 11 items on the secretary's agenda this morning. There are 4 reports of emergency procurement. We'd be happy to answer your questions.
The other great thing we have here, but I want to save her presentation until after we get done with the mayor and Ms. Alsher's. I always look forward to hearing from Dr. Susan Langley with the underwater archaeology folks in Maryland. Where is Dr. Langley?
She's right over here.
Doctor, you're here on time. No scuba gear?
Last night for 4 hours.
You were scubaing for 4 hours last night? I got to go do that with you sometime. And although, truthfully, the Board of Public Works feels like we've been underwater for the last year and a half. But we're going to hear from you, Doctor, but why don't we reserve until we get to those other
8.
Two items.
Reserve number 8.
Number 8 is the...
It's on hold. That's Maryland Maritime Archaeology Program that Dr. Langley is here for.
Okay.
And I think the rest of the items are pretty straightforward anyway.
Any questions on... Let's reserve on item number 8. We'll recall that at a later time. Not much later, mind you. Any questions on the balance of Secretary's agenda? Hearing none, Comptroller moves approval. Seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. Let's move on now to the... Did we just do the appendix of that as well? So we're on Program Open Space. Program Open Space, Ms. Alsher, and then we'll go to DGS.
Good morning. I'm Meredith Lasbury, representing the Department of Natural Resources. And this morning we have 7 local program open space items on the agenda. And we have this morning Mr. Kristen Alsher, who is the town manager of Myersville and is also a Washington County commissioner.
Commissioner, how are you?
All right.
Good.
Contrary to popular belief, even in election time in Washington County, I am not a female. So.
I apologize.
That's completely fine.
Did I say this?
I've been dealing with that since about the age of 5. So.
And Councilman, I know you, and I apologize if I did that.
First, and let me just say good morning. Thanks for the brief opportunity to speak. And I have a couple of things. First and foremost, thank you. On behalf of the Mayor and Council of Myersville, this is actually the 5th acquisition at this location, and the Comptroller was actually good enough to come up a few months back and visit this area. in this land acquisition and in a county that does not have a comprehensive wellhead protection ordinance in an area where 20 to 30% of the town's water supply comes from. It is important for the town to be able to protect these lands and also provide active, passive recreational space for a community. The second thing that I'd like to say is this is an investment in the future. This acquisition will now combine about 80 acres of space, and with the tradition of the number of users that we have in this area, from our local scout groups to our preservation and conservation organizations that are up there. And one unique thing that this piece of property does that the previous four acquisitions did not do is it connects us to the Appalachian Trail. That is important as it provides a direct connection then for town facilities to these federal recreational facilities and folks to be able to come down and get some enjoyment at the town as well. Lastly, and certainly not least, I'd like to say thank you to your staff. As one who wears a number of hats at a local level, I am certainly keenly aware of the budgetary limitations that exist in this state. And I will say that in your process of shedding the weight within this budget, it is clear that the cream of the crop of your staff that remain have risen to the top. And I would say that your staff member, Ms. Slotsky, is a perfect reflection of that and the service that she has provided to the town as we have acquired these five properties. So thank you again.
Commissioner, thank you, and thank you for your acknowledgement there. Mm-hmm. Mr. Comptroller?
Thank the Commissioner. He came in a couple of weeks ago with Western Maryland and briefed me on issues. And if my memory is right, in the last year or so, I actually walked acquisition site, and it wasn't easy. It was my rural hiking
We took a trolley up, and you came to a well that has been there for about a century now.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, the trolley up to the site that we walked. But thank you, because it made a lot of sense from a water conservation standpoint. So.
Where is the Appalachian Trail on?
It comes through this area.
Yeah.
The best location is where it comes across U.S. Route 40. And then cuts across I-70 in that area. This property is actually about a mile east of the crossing at U.S. Route 40, and there are some easement areas and actually some rustic trails that already exist on this piece of property that come down through our other four pieces of properties down on the 40 and up to the trail.
So there actually is access to the trail.
Yep.
Going through. Great. Good.
And if you'd like to see why this makes so much sense and why it scored high, you need only go on to GreenPrint, which is at www.maryland.gov, I think, right? GreenPrint. And you can see that it is contiguous to already protected green space and is within part of that ecologically important band of other space we hope to be able to preserve in our lifetimes. Commissioner, thanks very, very much for your leadership. Good seeing you again, Christian. Any other questions on program open space? Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. I'm sorry? Hold the
seven.
Phone.
No.
I apologize. There's seven projects. There's three items.
Good. Very good. No, don't hold the phone. Let's go.
All in favor, signal by saying aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. We now go to Department of General Services. Soft J. Department of General Services and Mayor Grant.
Yes, sir. Mayor Grant is the president. May I introduce my council, my agenda governor? Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. The Department of General Services has 26 items on our agenda today, including one supplemental. There is one revision to item 8 GM. We are withdrawing items 5 MR, 7 GM, and 11 LT. I'll be glad to answer any questions. Mayor Grant is here to talk about his grant for Seat Pleasant. Governor, I also would like to point out while I'm talking that the supplemental is a solar project that the Department of General Services is up with your approval will be implementing today, affecting five of our locations, eight buildings as we, by Sunday, we're pleased to put that in front of you today. And hopefully, we can stay with you for that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Collins.
Thank you.
Madam Treasurer, good morning to you. Mr. Comptroller, thank you. Good morning. Honorable Governor, good morning to you as well. To the dedicated members of the Maryland staff here in the great state of Maryland, citizens of this great state, good morning. Let me first acknowledge the courteous and professionalism of your staff, Mr. Governor, who has worked with us entirely over the past couple of years. And so I just wanted to go on record to acknowledge their hard work. Let me acknowledge the president of the chairman of the board of directors for the youth organization, Mr. John Thomas Henderson, Esquire, who is seated here as well. The Global Developmental Services for Youth Incorporated received a bond bill a few years ago to build, to provide a youth services center for young people in the central area of Prince George's County, Maryland. The center will provide an area where youth can receive mentoring services, high-speed computing, entrepreneurship training, and job skills training. The location identified for these services is the old Greendale Elementary School, which is now the Fagan Center, owned by the City of Excellence in C. Pleasant. At the time that the bond bill was approved, the City of C. Pleasant was in the process of starting renovations to the Fagan Center. Unfortunately, there was mold contamination that was discovered throughout the building. Because of the contamination, the city has been undergoing a detailed review of the best method to renovate that can occur at that site and contain the level of contamination that is present. This process has now been complete with myself and the City Council. The city issued requests for proposals. The responses for the RFP were received. The RFP was closed on February the 3rd of 2010. The RFP was to provide pre-construction services, including a complete feasibility study. The attorney for the city is in consultation with each of the selected contractors to execute the contract to begin the pre-construction services, to begin work on a new facility at that location. There will be three entities built on that site, one which will be the youth services facility, a new town hall, a multipurpose room, and a senior living facility. The bond funding provided for Global will be applied to the youth services center that will be constructed on that site. This concludes my remarks, and I will entertain any specific questions that you might have at this time.
Tell me, the Fagan Center, how does that segue into this?
That's the site. That's
this
the location.
This is the site.
Yes, sir.
And that the Fagan Center was closed down, right?
Yes.
Because of the roof caving in or
the
problems
roof,
with
yes,
the roof?
Yes, and contamination, and so we're tearing down that building.
Gotcha. So sure. We're tearing down that building, and these dollars will go to what the total project cost of this is, $350,000?
Yeah, that is only for the youth services facility portion. That
okay.
is not for the town hall or the senior dwelling.
So we're building this out one phase at a time?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Is it actually being rolled out one phase at a time?
Yes, ma'am.
And this is the first phase?
Yes.
The youth services?
Yes.
Component.
Providing other dollars don't come in for the other phases. Which
so
we anticipate.
So the senior piece still has to be put in place?
Yes.
Okay. Will this protect the roof anyway over the senior?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Well, we're complete new construction.
He's building.
Completely new construction, but no space for the seniors?
Yes. There will be space on the property for them.
Gotcha.
Upcoming.
Upcoming.
Yeah.
All right. Great. Okay.
Mr.
Comptroller.
I just wanted to thank Mayor Grant for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for your leadership. Go to communities like Sea Pleasant. You can see the kind of economic damage that's going on. Treasurer mentioned is going on around the country. So I'm glad that we can do a small partnership here. But I wanted to make sure everyone knows how impressive your leadership is and how it is.
Thank you so very much, Mr. Comptroller.
Okay, anything?
I think this is a great idea, by the way.
Thank you.
The
Multi-generational?
Multi-generational, but also just taking advantage of the building of the infrastructure to bring these things together. It seems to me a very cost-effective way.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Thank you so very much, Madam Treasurer.
Good. Any other questions on Department of General Services agenda items? Any other items? Okay, Comptroller moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thanks for being here.
Let's go back now to item number 8 on the Secretary's agenda. Dr. Langley.
I did. Yeah.
Ooh, slideshow. That would be Joshua Barney on the left, would it not?
It would, sir.
Thank you.
We're going to hear a lot.
And would that be Dr. Langley on the right?
It would.
Uh-huh.
Yes, that was a very, very cold St. Patrick's Day, actually, at Fort Carroll. Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. It looks like we're going to have a very exciting year, and fiscally, I hope I can make you happy. We have a lot of funding coming in, and it's all federal. And Ms. McDonald, I think, gave you a black folder, which has some of the material in it for what's happening this year. But we, I left this up for a moment because we are going to talk about Joshua Barney, but if I might have the next slide, please. Thank you. I put two projects on here for you to look at. The green star indicates where Bladensburg is, and they're doing not so much an archaeological study on this, but I put it in because of the partnership and funding level. We are working with Maryland State Highway Administration through a federal grant they received from American Battlefields Protection Program, and this is a historic context of the city of Bladensburg, so that is bringing us about $30,000 for that project. And the red stars indicate an American Battlefield Protection Project that is coming to state, to Maryland Historical Trust, to my program. And we are going to be looking at engagements of both the Revolutionary War and War of 1812, and doing 6 sites. And if we start with Baltimore, which, as I say, are the red stars, Baltimore is largely revisiting some concerns they had with documentation from a previous project that someone else did. Moving north, we will go back to the Elk River and look at
What are you doing in Baltimore?
It's really revisiting the documentation that someone else had done because the battlefield wasn't happy with it, so we're going to redo it.
Up North Point? Or?
Actually, what had happened is most of it's accurate, but they had added in Ferry Point Bar and a few other small battlements that were actually built after the Battle of Baltimore in case the British came back. And Park Service says, well, that doesn't count as Battle of Baltimore. We'd like you to redo the maps and things. So it's pretty minor there for that issue. And we will move up to the Elk River where we do have a wreck. We've had graduate students do their master's thesis on it, and it looks very 1812, and we want to revisit that. We're very happy with it. We have one button.
What wreck is that?
It's off of Frenchtown. We don't know enough yet. There were 2 vessels allegedly burnt there. I'd like to figure out which one it is.
Okay. Frenchtown was when the British came in and they torched it?
Yes. Uh-huh. Anyone who wouldn't, who had either helped the Americans or shot at them. If you were willing to sell them food, they wouldn't. But most of the Americans took pot shots at them, so they would take what they wanted and burn the town.
Mm-hmm.
So we know for sure there is a vessel there. We want to go down to the Sassafras River. This is coming down the eastern shore. And there are allegedly 4 vessels burnt there. And we between Georgetown and I think it's Fredericktown, we want to go back and look at see if we can find those.
Between Georgetown and Frederick?
I think it took, I'm trying to think of the town across the river from it. Georgetown and I thought it was Frederick.
Chesapeake City?
No, it's too far south. But it's right where Georgetown is on the Sassafras. There's a bridge there, and it's shared by 2 counties, Cecil and Kent. So we want to look for the 4 vessels that are in there. And then farther, the very southernmost point is the Battle of Kedges Strait, and that was a Revolutionary War battle.
The Cato and the Hawk. No,
Cato and the Hawk's on the other side. That's not.
Oh.
Kedges Strait was a number of barges, and it was led by Colonel Proper, who's quite a character on the eastern shore, and quite a local hero. And so we'd like to go look at that. That's going to be our most problematic. It's a 5 square mile area, so finding anything in there is going to be difficult.
And what are they? They're barges?
Yeah, well, they called them barges. They were gunboats, the same as we have in St. Leonard's Creek, but they also called those barges, row galleys.
And tell me about that battle. What happened there?
It was The Americans were largely successful, but it's hard to say. A lot of these battles were draws. They were really skirmishes, but we, in order to get our battlefield funding, and that was one that actually, when we looked at previously, it went forward in our last report and in a congressional report, and they were very interested in that because we don't have a lot of good Revolutionary War evidence, and they asked us to go back and see if we could find any of the barges, British, American, any of them.
So this is a Revolutionary War, this one down.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's somewhere within, what, a 5 mile?
A five square mile.
Hmm.
So it's going to be
a big area.
It's going to be the toughest one and probably take the longest of all of these to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to look for the Cato and the Hawk, which is, we have a pretty tight area on that. We've had a couple of people report images to us. They were erroneous. We did check them out. And so what we were lucky, I just found out a few days ago, we did receive a NOAA ocean exploration grant to use to rent some very sophisticated equipment we couldn't otherwise afford and take it down there because it will take out a lot of the background noise. There's a lot of limonite deposits that are basically an iron derivative, and they set off all the equipment to say, oh, boy, there's something here, and there's not. And a lot of the volunteers they find that they're vaguely oval-shaped, so they keep telling me they've found shipwrecks. And they do split into nice, even layers, and they say, it looks like planking. And they're all excited, and then I went and looked at it, and I hate to tell them, but, it's, you know, no, it's rock. So with this new equipment, we can tune this the signal that limonite gives out and do a better survey. So, and they're going to rent it to us. They're going to rent it to us long enough to be able to use it also on another project, the Scorpion. So we'll have that equipment for about 3 weeks this summer. And so we hope to be able to look at Cato and Hawk. We have a pretty tight area off of Patuxent Naval Air Station. They're interested in having the work done, so they're going to provide us with some in-kind support.
And tell us what the Cato and the Hawk were.
Two Revolutionary War era privateers that came out of Baltimore, and they were taking flour to the Caribbean to trade for weapons. And there were three vessels. There was another one, the Nautilus, that got away. When they saw the British coming up the bay, they ran aground deliberately, trying to get to the Nautilus didn't run aground deliberately. It was trying to run away. It grounded, it got off, and it did get away. The other two vessels grounded deliberately to take the cargo to shore, to haul their guns ashore, turn them around, and try and fire on the British. With marginal success. The British overtook them, but on the Cato, they set a charge, and we're not sure whether... There's two stories. One is that the British hit the magazine and blew it up. The other is that the Americans were trying to sabotage the vessel, and it went off early because it did kill both Americans and British. But I've subsequently found information that said the Cato was towed to Baltimore and sold at auction. And it was missing most of the stern. I can't envision it being towed. So we want to go and look for both the Cato and the Hawk. They were both sunk in fairly shallow water because they were grounded, so we know that. That shore hasn't eroded as badly as other areas. It's a pretty. We had Salisbury University a number of years ago reconstruct the bay shorelines back to 1847. They couldn't do it any earlier, but that area shows minimal change, so it should be...
Do you have a map of the whole bay that reconstructs it like that?
Yeah, we have several. Yeah, I don't know whether they're digitized yet. I have them in, like, multiple tubes and giant... We roll them out on the floor, but I don't know if they've digitized them yet. I could see if Salisbury has them, but they're very... They have 1847 and I think 1942, and then we had those overlain on photos from about 1997, I think. I'm giving a lecture on erosion in a week in Cambridge, so...
I'd love to see those.
I would be happy to send
it
to you.
We'd like to see your lecture on erosion. We'd like to see your slides anyway. Now, and these were sunk when? In the Revolutionary War?
Revolutionary War, at the very end, 1780. But they were still running back and forth. And Baltimore, of course, was as any new nation, relied very heavily on privateers in both wars, because when you can't afford a big navy like Britain had built up, you rely on giving people an incentive to come out and defend their own land. And we had some...
Entrepreneurs.
Absolutely, and they were very, very successful in both wars. And after the War of 1812, most of Baltimore's privateers went to South America because at that time all those countries were seceding from Spain and changed the name of their ships to something Spanish and just kept on being privateers.
I did not know that.
So we were successful. Battlefield gave us about 78,000 and NOAA gave us 23. So we've obtained a lot of federal funding for this project. And it will run most of the summer.
And this is right off Naval PAX?
Yes, we think so. Just south of it, between Yeah, actually, right off of Paxton, probably maybe Goose Creek, a little bit farther south. We've tightened the area up a lot. The Navy was a little concerned, actually made them clean up part of their base because they had a lot of stuff in the water, and they said, we've taken a lot of that out knowing you were coming. But if you find anything, let us know. And I'll show you some evidence of things we find in a moment. And then the last site is St. Leonard's Creek, and that is really just going back to check on the two gunboats we do know of to make sure that how they're sustaining, being reburied, has there been any vandalism. I suspect not. We're very lucky that people who live nearby take stewardship very, very much to heart, and they're constantly letting us know if they think anyone's there who shouldn't be. And even some of our volunteers, I had to give them a letter because every now and then DNR police or Coast Guard will come by and say, what are you doing? And they know them now, but which is good to know. It's good to hear that people are being vigilant.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very positive project. If I could have the next slide, I'll show you a little bit of what we do with what side scan sonar images and magnetometer images look like. The two torpedoes in the top left, the yellow one is one of our side scans. It's a sonar. It will detect anything that protrudes from the bottom. Nothing that's buried. It won't tell you what it's made of. It just tells you what it is. The one on the right is a magnetometer, and that's like a giant metal detector. It will detect buried items. It won't detect every piece of metal. It's been my experience that most War of 1812 metal is so graphitized it doesn't pick it up well unless you have something substantive like a cannon, an anchor. The images you're looking at, the one below the photo of the equipment, is the first presidential yacht, the Dispatch, and it was a screw, it's not in Maryland waters, but I wanted to show you the image. It's a steamer that was a screw-driven steamer. The one on the upper right is...
When did that go down?
October 10th, 1891.
About?
It mistook at night because it was looking for the lightship to go close to shore to avoid a storm. It mistook the lighthouse for the lightship and drove into the shoal.
Hmm.
So that old joke about we're a lighthouse, it's true.
Was any president on it?
No, he wasn't. Secretary of the Navy was supposed to be, but had not been picked up yet. They were coming back down to pick him up.
Hmm.
No lives lost, but the ship was obviously lost. The one on the upper right is an iron hull, and it looked, I thought, like a World War I freighter. It's what one would look like. It turned out to be much earlier. It was a steam freighter called the Oak Dean. Went down in 1878. Just out of Scotland, it was just, happened to founder in a storm. But it's an interesting image to pick up and see. So you can see that you sort of have to know what you're looking at, but these are really good images. The one below is a canal boat up off of Perryville. So it was obviously coming down the Susquehanna Canal when it sank, but canal boats are very distinctive. So just an example of what side-scan sonar can tell us. It'll also, these don't have very much superstructure, but it can tell you how much it's standing up proud as well. That's an excellent thing. And the opposite magnetometer, when we were running our survey off Assateague, and this happened to be off Ocean City, we collected this collection of items on the left, and we hadn't seen anything in a long time, so that was highly exciting. And we thought there were concrete culverts to go under roads because they were about the right size. But when we put the magnetometer over it, you can see we have a bright green spot and a bright blue spot. That means a very high point, a very low point. And when you get a dipole like that, it's usually something cultural. It's usually something very metallic, very solid. And so when we investigated further, we found out, if I may please, that they were armored personnel carriers that were dumped there as part of a reef creation project that someone forgot to tell us about. It was a long time ago, so I really couldn't go back on it, but it was a bit of a surprise to find them there. I think the story went that they were supposed to be out a bit further, but the weather got bad and they needed to unload them, and that's where they went. So they're... I'm not sure if that was before my time or not, but we never heard about it, so I couldn't find it in the records. I finally found someone who sent me this image, so... But just to give you an idea of the kinds of equipment we use and what they can tell us. May I have the next one? This is one other item.
Dr. Langley, before you get off the equipment, what's the name of the person?
Rachel Carson.
Rachel Carson. No, but what's Don?
Don Bosse's.
Umsies. Has this new boat, the Rachel Carson, which they inaugurated or whatever you do, just a year ago. A year or two ago, that has all sorts of new equipment on it, including stuff you can drag behind it.
It's probably similar. There are more and less sophisticated items. There's something called the multi-beam sonar, which will rebuild wire for.
Why don't we put you in contact with them if there's any way that their tools could be of use?
I'm wondering if you collaborate with them on the equipment end of things.
Yeah, we're pretty. You set us up for equipment a few years ago quite well, and we had another side scan donated to us recently.
The other thing, though, is if they're going different places, I mean, you can't be everywhere at once.
No.
I have no idea, just that the state is supporting these two vessels.
That's fantastic.
It occurs to me that we might as well get as much use out of our infrastructure investments as possible.
If we can tell them the kinds of things we look for.
Exactly.
No one knows this, and NOAA's hydrographer, when it's in the area, will often send us a CD and say, we picked these up. For example, they found 13 targets in the Potomac, and I'll get to that in a moment, but we have a volunteer group down there that just loves to run out and check these, and they'll save me a ton of time by coming back and saying, this one's a modern one, this one's fiberglass, this is a pile of concrete, and then they say, well, these ones look old. Then I can go there instead of wasting time, but they love to check this out for us, and so NOAA's very much very collegial, so if I speak to them and they at least can say, by the way, we saw something interesting and pass it back, that would be
Doctor,
very helpful.
What's your you have your own ship?
We do, sir.
What's your ship called?
Well, I'm going to yell. I know it's bad luck not to name them, but I never named them.
You never named it? The Nancy Cop? Nothing
good
like
for
that?
Good for you.
I will. I had a former staff member who went by size, and he called it like, we call our program MMAPA, but we just call it MAP, Maryland Maritime Archaeology Program. So he called it like Sea Map, River Map, Creek Map, as they got smaller. But whenever I radio in, I usually just say Maryland State Research Vessel, and the Coast Guard know us, so.
Yeah, you and Rachel Carson should collaborate. Now, I'd vote for naming it the Nancy Cop. But you could call it the Peter French Show.
We're happy to do that.
We're still working on this.
I haven't put the stickers on for this year. I'll go over and paint on it while I'm at it.
It's
just
surprising, though, that you wouldn't have talked to the crew of the Rachel Carson.
If they're connected with Sea Grant, I've spoken with them in the past, and I shouldn't say it in public. They weren't very interested.
Right.
because Sea Grant in other areas, NOAA sponsors it, and I have, because I work with NOAA a lot, I've asked them if they would consider speaking with Sea Grant and saying, because Sea Grant area is almost autonomous, and this area they're very, very into the environment of the bay. In Wisconsin, they fund all the underwater archaeology as well. It just depends on the regional office and where their interest lies.
Uh-huh. I think we're going to convene a meeting of the two of you, and Colonel is going to.
We're not trying to make trouble. It's just maximum.
No, it'd be wonderful. It would be a very sensible thing to do. I'd be happy to do that.
So keep going. What is this?
These are some of the ordnance that we find, and these came out of Baltimore Harbor. The Corps usually finds them when they're dredging. We've worked with them in developing their ordnance manuals. Obviously, safety first.
That's great. So this comes out of the dredging when they find these things.
We did have a big meeting about it because some folks they reported to the right people who then promptly took them home. And so we had to. I had to call up Aberdeen and go, please don't let them take them home. And they said, we told them not to, but they just left. And so we had to sort of chase these people down and say, please don't do that. These things are live. Some of them are live. Most of them, in this case, the only live ones are the two oval ones in the center. Those are early form of Schenkel shell. It predates the Civil War. We had five of them. They were all live, and they had to be destroyed. The one above with the hole in it and the two little pockets is a War of 1812 bomb. That is a classic mortar shell intended to go up and over walls. So the rocket's red glare, the bomb's bursting in air, that's one of them. We had an even bigger one that was Civil War era that was 325 pounds, had the fuse still in it. I made very close friends with the bomb techs in Baltimore and at Fort Meade, and they're rolling it around the ground, and we're all backing up, and the fuse fell out, the powder poured out, and they said, ma'am, we believe we've inerted it. But we do find these. We do work with Aberdeen. Originally, the argument we made was these are state property because they were legally abandoned. They were thrown away intentionally with no intention of collecting them again after. Then someone down in Virginia trying to inert one blew himself up, and the Army said, we'd really like to claim them, and we said, we think you should. So they take them now, x-ray them, photograph them, weigh them, measure them, and report it to me. And we can go look if they're not dangerous. If they're dangerous, they're gone. So, it's just a point to make. In the lower right, the very smallest, the others are solid shot. They're cannonballs as such. The very smallest one is a swivel gun shot, and that would have been anti-personnel weapon from deck guns that they could swivel around. The two of them, and I can't remember, I think it's the two on the right, the two that are the same size, came from a French cannon that was considered so significant by Fort McHenry, since they knew exactly which gun and they still had it, that they paid for the conservation of about 45 items with the provision they could borrow those two for show. And so they paid for all the conservation of all the ordnance that came out 1 year.
Hmm.
So that was, I thought, more than reasonable. Yes, the next one, please. This one is probably going to be a very large, very long-term, very partner-oriented project. In 1980, the Maryland Historical Trust did fund a private nonprofit to go and do some limited examination of a vessel found in the Upper Patuxent, right around Wason's Corner, where the Route 4 bridge crosses the river. And they found a number of artifacts. I'll show you a few of them in a moment. That would indicate they were definitely War of 1812. They had every reason to believe they were part of Joshua Barney's flotilla, and I have no doubt that they are. But they also, they alleged it was the Scorpion, which was Barney's flagship. Now, there was another ship, the Vigilant, there was another ship, the Islet, and there were about a half a dozen merchant vessels. So we're still calling it the alleged Scorpion, but there's one really good smoking gun in here that may prove it is indeed the Scorpion, so we want to go back and take a look at this.
That may prove that it is or
it's
not.
We think it is. And I didn't doubt it before, but archaeologists never say anything definite until I find a nameplate or Barney was here or something. But there's one artifact that is a very good indicator, I think. We want to start this project this summer. The Navy has agreed to fund it completely this summer. And to do some survey to define exactly where the vessel is, what's the orientation, to make sure that where the bow was alleged to have blown open, we want to make sure that it's what the shape is, how much overburden there is, there could be as much as 8 feet of mud over it, and to make sure it's not literally adjacent to another vessel, because if we, in 2012, we'd like to do significant excavation and we don't want to damage another vessel that would, while looking at one of them. So this summer it's really to fine-tune and pinpoint what's there. If we can do some testing to check the stability of the wood, the condition of the wood. The intent this year is not to bring up any artifacts. However, if during testing something shows up and it's imperiled by our work, we will recover it. And the Navy's all agreeable to this. State Highways is partnering in this. And I have to say, Dr. Julie Shalbitsky is our partner with Bladensburg. She's also our partner on this. And we want to thank Mr. Neil Peterson, who's been very, very encouraging of everything we're doing in her time. And
is it
actually,
north of the Route 4 bridge or south of the Route 4
It
bridge?
Is north of it, around the bend.
Really?
Yes, sir. There actually was one damage when the Route 4 bridge went in, and there's another one. There was another one, we believe, south of that, but it was pulled out in 1958 by the Marlborough Hunt Club. And the British blew up 6 vessels after they captured them, the merchant vessels that they said were unsuited for sailing. They wouldn't take them as prizes. And Barney settled the rest, of course, when he went to Bladensburg.
So these would have been the ones that... I mean, he scuttled a bunch of them in Leonard Creek, right?
Two.
And then, what, he went further north on his way to
Bladensburg? He was following, the British were chasing him. He broke out of the creek. They had him blockaded in. And the second battle of St. Leonard's Creek, they put gun mounts upward, Jefferson Patterson Parker Museum, and fired on the British to force them back, and he had no choice but to go north. And at that point, he had received word that the original British feint up the Potomac, and it wasn't a fake. And up the British halfway along said, we've got Washington in a pincer move. It was never their goal, but they suddenly realized they had this wonderful psychological weapon, and why not attack the capital? More or less revenge for attacking York in Canada, which was the capital then. But they said, originally it was going to be a fake, and then they were going to attack Baltimore, but they just took it was opportunistic. And Barney was already north of them. So he just kept going north. He left his son in charge, took his men and cannon, headed for Bladensburg, and said, if you see the British, blow the ships. Don't let them take them. Which
so he got out of there.
And went north.
He went up north to, and then when he got off with the cannon at Route 4?
About that area, yes.
That's where he sunk the other ones when the British came
in
up
that
way?
In that area. And we've gone all through the wetlands. They're trying to find out where the rest are. They allegedly might have got one or two vessels as far as Queen Anne. I don't think they could have gotten much farther than that because they said the oars were almost touching the sides of the river then. Because these are 27-foot sweeps. They're reaching quite far. So we think that most of them were there. We did look at the wetlands. We checked out to see if the river's reconfigured, which it has to a certain extent. I suspect what happened to the rest of them is there was a gentleman named John Weems, who was the ancestor of the Weems steamship line, who salvaged two of those vessels at the time for the Navy, and the Navy didn't pay him. So he kept the material. And I suspect if I were him, I would say, it's wartime, we need materials. Clearly the Navy's not interested because they didn't pay me. And I suspect he salvaged the rest, and that's why we're not finding a full flotilla up there. But this one that we are looking at, people said they were swimming off of it, well into the century. So that was why it was a little bit easier to find. So what we wanted to do, as I said, this summer.
It's a creek up there, I tell you. I don't know how. Is the level of the thing lowered since 200 years ago?
It's raised. It used to be quite deep there. I mean, the bottom's come up about 8 feet. So if we had 8 feet less silt, it would be almost 20 feet deep. And there is a hole right above the creek that was over 100 feet deep at the time. They called it Scotchman's Hole. And that happens periodically. Most of the Potomac, most of the Patuxent, most of the Susquehanna all have 110-foot holes where it's just the geology of how rivers come into the bay.
Interesting. I think it's interesting.
So we hope to, in between this year and next, do all of this, get all our permitting, and our big push in our expensive year in 2012, we want to actually coffer it and do it as a dry excavation so we can have public there, we can have visitors, and surprisingly, State Highways has encouraged us to go in for transportation enhancement money. Obviously, no one guarantees anything, but they've been very encouraging. We've put in for an appropriation at the federal level, which obviously isn't guaranteed, and they said that several times, but they did invite us to participate and send in. And I sent them the whole budget because I said every year is a couple hundred thousand, and one year is like $3 million, and you need to know why. And we want, what we want to do is do the big excavation in 2012 as a part of the commemoration for the War of 1812, but also so that the publications, filming, artifacts will be conserved by 2014 when Maryland really hits its stride for the celebration, and then finish it by 2016, all the finishing, the conservation, anything else like that. NOAA is interested in participating, providing sort of live from the dive or live from the dig, telecommunications. We've had a large number of people and organizations interested in this. So,
great.
To date, the Navy's committed to fund this year. They've committed about a quarter of next year's, not to say they won't give more, but they want to see what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been very positive all the way around. I think we're in a very good partnership project here.
I'd like the midshipman to reconstruct the Chesapeake Flotilla.
Actually, we've asked the midshipmen to, they were going to do it as a class project, and now I think one student's doing it as an engineering project to design a cofferdam. We've had an engineering firm do
the cofferdam?
To do the cofferdam like they did at the LaBelle. So that it can be pumped dry and excavated so people can see what's going on. But as an engineering exercise, he wanted to try and design one. Now, we have one, sort of the proper one, but it's going to be an interesting check for that, mm-hmm. for that student to come out. And we have spoken to the Academy about involving them, and they are interested.
I wish they'd rebuild the flotilla. Maybe get somebody to do it in fiberglass cheaper. I don't know.
May I have the next one, please?
Any questions? Okay, I'm sorry. Keep going.
I just wanted to show you the model on the lower right is at Calvert Marine Museum right now. And the sails we know are wrong now. That is a very North African rig. And the reason we think they may have even put this on the model is these gunboats, these row galleys, and the drawing on the upper left was by Howard Chappelle, who's sort of the master, the late Howard Chappelle, was sort of the expert at recreating these vessels. But a lot of it was conjecture and from written documents because none had been really found then. And
so these would be the Chesapeake Flotilla?
We think that they varied in vessels because he brought some out of mothballs. Some were Jeffersonian gunboats. The ones in St. Leonard Creek were actually rebuilt in Baltimore. They were new. So he had this mixture of old and new. These were probably some of the older ones, which would have been the Scorpion. We don't know how accurate this is until we actually can excavate it and look, and that's part of the rationale is to find out, because he was doing it from description. The model was from description. The interesting thing is, just prior to the War of 1812, of course, the first war America fought as a country was the Barbary Wars of North Africa. And they were very interested in the zebecs, the vessels that looked very like this, rotor sailed, usually had one sail, that the corsairs were using. And we then find records in the state archives saying zebecs are being built in Maryland. And so these may well have been after that design because they found they were handled very well in shallow waters.
Uh-huh.
These are largely conjectural. We want to find out what the truth is.
They also look very similar to ships that the Irish used on the west coast of Ireland for a couple hundred years. So maybe the Barbary pirates stole the design too. I don't know.
They actually did. They wiped out the entire town of Baltimore in Ireland. They took the entire town as slaves to North Africa. And two people made it back out of the entire village. So the corsairs were in Ireland. That's my other passport, I know that.
Do you ever find or look for earlier things?
We have had prehistoric log canoes, yes, and we do have prehistoric sites in the bay. Unfortunately, the oldest ones are going to be under cubic million yards of ton because they're going to be along the Susquehanna, which when it was a river. But we do find them on the eastern shore. We have found one Paleo-Indian site on the Patuxent. So we look for everything. We have the next one. These are two of the artifacts that were found on the earlier, when they did the test excavations. The one on the right is a deck stove known as a camboose. It's a Revolutionary War era, was obviously brought back out. The one on the left is a Paul Revere-style lantern. They found two of those. Neither of these are very effective on a ship. The men couldn't stand the vessels. They said they hold people or cargo, not both. Nothing stays dry. They went to shore to cook. They would never use a deck stove. Their person who was their chandler was not... He put all kinds of strange things on there. And so the lanterns were completely unused because they're not really suitable for a vessel either. But so it's interesting to see what you can learn about the culture of what's going on there. If I may have the other two. These are extremely valuable artifacts. The surgeon's kit, because, and if you ever had a root canal, that tooth key is just amazing. One that looks like a corkscrew. The surgeon is usually on the flagship. So that's one indicator it may well be the scorpion. The cup on the right is very difficult to see. It's a grog cup, to forget the ration of grog. But the initials on it, and it is a backward C, is Caesar Wentworth. He's the only crew member with that name. He was a person of color. He was the cook, and they have a note that he was taken off the ships they scuttled in St. Leonard's Creek and put on the scorpion. So finding his grog cup is a really good indicator we probably have the right ship.
Caesar Wentworth.
And of course, Charles Ball.
Charles Ball, other African-American.
He served on this vessel as well. Mm-hmm. And so we have written documentation.
And he fought at the Battle of Bladensburg, right?
Yes, sir. I believe he went with Barney from the ship, but he was in the flotilla.
And then he was up in the Battle of Baltimore as well, wasn't he?
Yes, sir.
What's the point over there where the lighthouse is?
Lazaro? Lazaretto.
Lazaretto Lighthouse.
And the coin is, I find it, we're happy it has an 1803 date. If it was after 1814, we'd be really sad. But it's...
Then it wouldn't count.
No. Well, it would count, but it just wouldn't be the right ship or right period. But the old English penny sides are big. And the cuts on it are an indication, it's called a chaw penny. The sailors would carry a twist of tobacco and cut a chaw of it off when they wanted. But since most of them served barefoot, you don't cut on the deck. You make splinters if you do that, and then you have to walk on them. So they would lay down a penny and cut their tobacco on that. So it's just a really, and the fact that they could find this in 8 feet of mud with zero visibility was extremely impressive. And these were other artifacts as well. I just wanted to give you a sense of some of the things that turned up in this. So I think it's a very exciting project. Obviously, our funding isn't completely guaranteed, but we have at least enough this summer to do a good job on what we're doing and good equipment for it as well.
Liberty.
In keeping with the War of 1812, one of our groups, and there's a couple of flyers in that folder, one of our volunteer groups has decided they want to go down to Mount Vernon and look for the Federalists. And if you've seen the Federalists, I think it's usually downstairs. I don't forget at the moment. It was sailed by Joshua Barney to Mount Vernon as a gift for Washington.
And then went to Washington in a hurricane or something, right?
It sank in a hurricane. And Mount Vernon has actually given them a couple of $1,000, and most of it's volunteer. And they're going to go down, and they wanted a project to do 1812 stuff. So I said I would help them when I could, but they're going to see what they can do. And Quantico actually wants them to look at some stuff for them. So our little volunteer group is really taking off and getting them.
That's great. So they're going to look for the Federalist off the coast of in Mount Vernon's silt.
And they put a little flyer in there. They didn't put the history, but they put their survey areas. They've had two non-capital grants from us, and we've got an amazing return on our investment from them. They've put in for a third. Obviously, we'll have to see how that goes, but I have no reason to want to deny it. And so they put in their proposed survey. On the back is a map of the areas they've covered for us. And it really does help me by sifting out the background noise of modern vessels. It was a houseboat. They found out that somebody sank it in an insurance scam 30 years ago or something and saved me trying to look for it. I can look at the important stuff. And they still maintain our U-boat buoy. And last year on Earth Day, it was declared a marine protected area by NOAA. It was a charter member, and it's one of only three states. Most were federal, and it's the only cultural resource, completely cultural resource one. So they were, and they announced that in Annapolis at their annual meeting. So it was very, very happy Earth Day for us.
That's great. And you don't know. Hey, were you involved in that Federalist and making sure that it had the right flags and insignia and all of that stuff on?
I think that was before my time. I wasn't involved with it.
I'll withdraw the question or the line of question that was about to follow.
And a bit of encouragement. I hope this makes you all happy fiscally. We're finding with our compliance work that we are seeing a threefold increase over what we were getting last year. So far this year, we had 600 permit applications coming through our hands to evaluate. In February alone, we had 200 last year, so I'm hoping that's an indication of things picking up again for us. Of course, it means a ton of work for us, but it's good work. It's good to know that things are
happening. What do they represent? Those are applications?
When someone wants to do any kind of work on the property, an undertaking, it has to go through Department of Environment, Corps of Engineers, and to 13 agencies, including us, DNR.
So these are people who want to go down and...
This is 200, 600 was land and water. So, but
okay.
So it can be, when I look at them, it's because they want to put in riprap, replace a bulkhead, dredge a spur channel, put in a new pier or something like that. And I have to say, if they hit my desk, they're usually gone in 24 hours because I'm just too busy to hold them up for 30 days.
Okay.
So, but it's a good sign to see that this is happening for us. And that's most of it for this year. We had a successful year. We finished all our offshore survey last year. Off the coast, we finished the coast survey. It's probably time to do it again now. If I can get the Park Service to fund it, we will. But they've been very generous, but I suspect it won't happen for a little while. And so that's most of what we're doing this year. We do have our workshop coming up this Saturday. There's a flyer in there. Archaeology Month is coming up. You do have a poster, a very striking poster this year. Oh, thank you for doing that. The only fly in all of my, and there's a booklet that goes with the poster, so you can see all the events that are happening around the state. I would say the only fly in my ointment at the moment is I had a three-person office when I started here, and I gave up one position because the chap's health wouldn't let him dive anymore, so we didn't want to lose him, so he's elsewhere. But my assistant just left us in January, so I'm doing the work of three people right now. And while I can do that for a while, it's going to be very difficult to drive the boat and run the equipment at the same time. So I did put in for an exemption. I heard we were declined last week, but I also found out there was an error on it. Sometimes when things leave my hand, they get edited. And the submission that went in said that it was going to be 90% state funds, and in fact it's 50% federal funded. So that may help. I'm going to resubmit it, and hopefully that's my the only thing that's keeping me from... I don't want to give back any federal money, so I have to scour some help up to do this. So we've been very lucky this year. We've probably brought in a couple of hundred thousand. I hope by next year to break the million mark on the funds I've brought in through this program. I expect we'll be very close, within dollars of it, if not over it.
Great. Mr. Comptroller?
I'm always impressed that we have an underwater archaeologist. Could you make sure you let me know how the governor does when he comes down and goes scuba diving to see what we find down there?
Yeah, absolutely.
I kid you, because I always enjoy this presentation. And I guess I have a question for the secretary. If it's a federal fund, is that something we consider under the... I know we have tough budget times, but as Dr. Langley said, she's it now. Everyone else has been let go because of budget problems on her team. If someone attracts federal grants, are they also prohibited from... How do you implement a federal grant if you only have one person in the operation, I guess, is the question. I need to be serious.
So she
gets, apparently she has a federal grant of $168,000 sitting in somewhere that she controls, but she's under the hiring freeze, and the entire team that she's using to implement these programs consists of herself.
And as she indicated, there was an error on the
document. We'll be resubmitting. We'll resubmit this, and hopefully it'll be...
I will certainly follow up.
I appreciate that. Yeah, we'll be rewriting it now, but I wanted to, I just found that today, and I'm looking at it going, that's not where that money comes from. So if I can fix that, I hope.
Dr. Langley, I'll follow up.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Anyway, you're my favorite underwater archaeologist.
Well, thank you. There aren't very many of us. I am the only woman, but if anyone does want to dive, I'm a master instructor. I'll teach you. You can come out. We'll take
it. I think I'll take a pass. I could operate the boat, maybe.
Mr. Enright sends his best to you. Sorry he can't be here. We usually call him out for your annual performance.
I do appreciate that. I appreciate
and,
very much.
And he reminds me that every year Secretary Foster's staff of archaeologists have been digging out your PIN numbers, and every year we dutifully bury them under four more layers of silk.
I do appreciate that too. We'll keep bringing in money as long as we can, but it is encouraging. I think this big project, I hope it will last, because we do have a lot of at least. No, while nobody can grave it in stone, we do have a lot of encouragement, which if someone's asking you to come in for money, I usually take that as a positive sign.
That's great. So. All right. Treasurer moves approval of item 8, seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. So thank you very much, Doctor. We now move on to, we did program open space. How about University System of Maryland? I'm sorry, Delia Morheim, which one are you here on? Just watching? All right. Yes, sir.
Got two positions, Andrew and Frank. And Andrew's over my house floor today. She just completed last month. She moved to my district for 100-mile run.
Oh. Wow. That's great.
Attorney Paul Gardner, friend from the district.
Attorney Paul Gardner, good to see you, sir. All right, University System of Maryland.
Morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer.
600 miles. It sounds like a, what's the song that's from? I can walk 100 miles.
We have 5 items for your consideration today. We've withdrawn item 6S.
Withdrawing item 6S. Any questions on University System of Maryland agenda items? Controller moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. Brilliantly done. Thank you, sir. Department of Information Technology. Do it. Do it now, but do it right.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Elliot Schlanger, Department of Information Technology. This morning we have 2 items on the agenda. I'd be happy to take any questions at this time.
Any questions? Treasurer moves approval. Seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Thank you, Mr. Schlanger.
Thank
you. We'll move on now to lunch, I guess.
No,
is there anything
budget,
else?
Budget.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I skip budget and transportation? I didn't have budget and transportation in my book this go-round. All right. Oh, I do have DBM. It was right under POS. How could I forget? Let's go to Department of Budget and Management.
Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, good morning. There are 7 items on the Department of Budget Management's agenda for today. I would like to withdraw item 3, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, any questions on budget management? You okay? Yes,
yes.
You have a question?
I find it very exciting, but have no questions.
Okay. The Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. We move now to the Department of Transportation.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Beverly Swank Staley representing MDOT. We have 7 items today, and items 5, 6, and 7, GM Mod, have been previously revised. Part of the effort we're doing to change procedures in the airport.
Any questions? Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it, and that concludes our meeting of the Board of Public Works. See you all at revenue time. What are their questions on?